As you're waking up here in Iran, tens of thousands gathered now at the soccer stadium at Tehran University to hear the words of Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei.
The enemies of Islam have always wanted to agitate Muslims' hearts and give them anxiety.
It's a week to the day since the first results of a disputed election that has riven this nation. This morning, the Ayatollah calls for peace and tranquility, even while telling protesters they would be held responsible for any chaos. A translation of the words of the Ayatollah, an analysis of an election, all ahead on The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning. I'm Catherine Lanford. John Hockenberry is away. We're going to continue our live coverage of events in Iran, plus looks at some more domestic news, including yesterday's Supreme Court decision on DNA testing and an arts quiz. Let's see if you pass. But first, we're going to turn to Femi Oke and some headlines.
Good morning, everybody. Hello there, Catherine. Iran's Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei says that Iranians should not go out on the streets to take part in protests over the contested presidential elections. He says that they will be held responsible for any chaos that happens. Opposition demonstrators, though, vowed to carry on with new protests. Back here in the United States, Defense Secretary Robert Gates says that the use of social networking sites in places like Iran is one of the most significant developments in the last 20 years. He spoke on CBS.
The freedom of communication and the nature of it is a huge strategic asset for the United States.
Gates says that the sites keep authoritarian governments from having a monopoly on information and make it easier for citizens to communicate freely. Catherine.
Financier Alan Stanford will appear in federal court today in Richmond, Virginia, on charges of fraud. He surrendered to FBI officials yesterday. He is accused of conducting an $8 billion Ponzi scheme. The Senate has approved a spending bill that will fund the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan for the next few months. The vote was 91-5. The $106 billion measure now goes to President Obama for his signature. The Pakistani government says the Army's military operation against Taliban militants in the Swat Valley is almost over. People displaced by fighting there will be able to begin returning home tomorrow. More than 2 million people fled the area during the fighting. And on Wall Street yesterday, the Dow rose 0.7% to close at 85.56. The S&P rose 8.8% to close at 9.18. It's the start of Father's Day weekend.
I'm in travel. I haven't got a card on. My dad lives in London.
Phone calls. That's why Alexander Bell developed the telephone.
Great.
So we want to know, and tell us you didn't get a tie, what is your most vivid memory or experience that you have with your dad? Dear old dad, tell us your stories at 877-8-MY-TAKE, mytake@thetakeaway.org. You should call him, Fem. Just call him right now.
Collect. Can I do it from the office?
No, we don't call dad collect after a certain age.
Oh, shame.
Sorry. You're a big girl now. Happy Father's Day almost.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information about the Foundation's digital initiatives at KnightFoundation.org.
You're listening to The Takeaway.
I'm Catherine Lanfer, in for John Hockenberry, who's away. What you're hearing right now are the cheers of tens of thousands still gathered as we speak in Iran at the soccer stadium at Tehran University to hear Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei speak.
Having trust in the Islamic Republic state was displayed and revealed during the elections. I will let you know later on. The enemies of the Iranian nation want to break this trust in the state.
The words of the Ayatollah Khamenei, that's one translation. For a little more analysis, we're going to go now to Jonathan Marcus from our partners, the BBC. He joins us from London. Jonathan reports, of course, that the Ayatollah is saying that the results of the election were not rigged and that people should be staying off the streets.
Well, absolutely. It was a lengthy speech, about an hour and three quarters or so. I suppose typical for the sort of person he is and the situation in which he was speaking. But a very tough message, fundamentally. He called for an end to the street demonstrations. He said that the opposition would be blamed for any violence that occurred now. He said that the street protests will not pressure the establishment, the authorities, to accept what he called the illegal demands made by the candidates. So a tough speech, really a call to draw a line under all of this now.
Well, and talk about what was at stake for him. There had been some thought that maybe he would try to accommodate the concerns of those who were out on the streets, but obviously that's not so.
Well, I think the difficulty for the Iranian system, if you like, is that they haven't really left themselves any institutional means of climbing down. After all, it was the supreme leader himself who very quickly came out and endorsed the election results and accepted that President Ahmadinejad had been re-elected. And once he had done that, it's very hard to see any climbing down. Obviously, there has been an acceptance of a partial recount of the ballots in certain places. I understand that the initial, certainly in one province where that has already been done, it's simply confirmed the results as they were before. I don't think anybody expects that partial recount is going to alter the situation. I think many of the critics of the regime had been wanting to see a full rerun of the presidential contest. That clearly isn't going to happen now. So it was a tough speech. There was an element of conciliation, though. He went out of his way to stress that all of the candidates were not, you know, none of the candidates were against the Islamic State. This was a dispute within the state, as it were, not by opponents from outside. He was quite positive on his longtime rival, Hashemi Rafsanjani, a man who's widely been accused of corruption, a chief rival of the supreme leader. He went out of his way to explicitly say this was wrong to accuse Mr. Rafsanjani of corruption and so on. But the fundamental message about the disorder, about the continuing opposition to the election results was clear.
So what position does this leave the protesters in? If the Ayatollah was in one tough spot and couldn't climb down, where are they?
Well, that really now is the fundamental question. What are we going to see in the ensuing days? Are we going to see continuing demonstrations? What are clear key leaders like Mr. Mousavi going to say, who had been on occasions calling for people to come out onto the streets and so on? One has a strong sense that behind the scenes, all of these people have been told by the supreme leader that this has got to stop now. It's going to be interesting to see whether if they apply the brakes, it applies a brake to the largely spontaneous public pressure that there has been. And of course, in the speech as well, there was an awful lot of condemnation of the world outside. He singled out Britain in particular for condemnation. He called on the Iranians to see the hand of the enemy in all of what was going on. The most evil, he said, was the British government. And he made a very strange comparison. He talked about American Zionist money creating political change in Georgia. I'm not sure exactly what he was referring to there, but he very strongly, in effect, said, well, Iran is no Georgia. Who do they think they're dealing with, these people? We are a serious country and we can express the will of our people in our own way. So not much concession there.
What about the meeting that was going to be held between the three candidates, the minority candidates, if you will, that they were going to go over election results? Is that meeting still on?
I don't have any ability to say what is actually going on behind the scenes. I think this is one of the great problems. I mean, you see, obviously, the events on the streets. You have this extraordinary avalanche through the electronic media, the Twitters and so on and so forth, of all kinds of opinion coming out of the country. But, of course, what is entirely unclear, what is entirely shrouded in a certain amount of mystery, really, is what is actually going on inside the ruling circles, the clerical circles. But I think from the message that the Supreme Leader gave in his speech today, a very uncompromising message, as I say, a call for a line to be drawn and for all of this to end now, I think that gives us a strong sense of what the tenor of the debate may well be inside the ruling circles of the regime.
Jonathan Marcus, I want to thank you for joining us.
Pleasure.
Jonathan Marcus, with our partners, the BBC in London. We're now going to turn to Erik Bjornlund. He is a president and founder of Democracy International. It's a consulting firm that helps governments create free and fair elections. He's monitored elections throughout the world, Africa, Asia, the Middle East. Now, the Ayatollah Khamenei was just saying that these elections were not rigged, that they were free and fair. And yet there are, of course, many people who suspect otherwise. And we're going to turn to Erik for a little insight. Erik, we know that there were no international monitors observing this election. But even from a distance, what can we tell?
Well, ultimately, we can't tell the final answer about whether the votes were counted accurately. We can tell that the election didn't meet certain international standards. Their elections are more than just what happens on election day, and we do know that there were limitations on the extent of the democracy in Iran. We know that the legal and institutional framework doesn't allow for everyone to have access to the ballots, and the Guardian Council can restrict who the candidates are. We know that there were limits on media access before the election and misuse of government resources by the incumbent. But we ultimately really won't know and cannot know whether the ballots were counted accurately.
You've been monitoring elections for 25 years. When you first started looking for details and clues about this election, what was the first thing that grabbed your attention?
Well, I think that there's been a lot of speculation that is not well-founded. We can't rely on polls done several weeks before the election that may have suggested a certain turnout. That is a certain result. That's not a good basis for knowing what happened on election day. I think that one thing that does raise suspicions is the very quick announcement of the election results. This was an election in which an estimated 39 million people voted mostly or entirely by hand ballots counted locally by hand, and yet the election results were announced very shortly after the close of polls. In other elections that we've monitored where ballots have been cast locally by hand, the time to count them is much, much longer than that. For one thing, it takes more than an hour typically to count the ballots at a local place. But more than that, it takes a very long time to transmit those results to a central place and have them be aggregated. So the quick announcement of the results, I think, is the most indicative suggestion that the ballots were not counted carefully and accurately.
If you look at the analysis that is coming out of Iran, there are some, I would say, cautioning words coming out now that there were indeed a sizable number of people who did vote for President Ahmadinejad. So what caution would you offer to us about simply dismissing his support in that country?
Well, I think one thing that this election shows is that Iran is a lot more competitive, has a lot more competitive politics than most Americans previously realized. And the extent of the competition, the type of competition, the turnout is remarkable. I think it's clear that President Ahmadinejad had a lot of support and won a lot of votes. It's also, I think, clear from outside that the challenger Mousavi gained a lot of votes. I think that we do have to be very careful about jumping to conclusions about who won the most votes. I think we don't have enough information. I think this is also an example of why it's unfortunate that Iran is not part of the international consensus on accepting international observers.
Okay.
If, in fact, Ahmadinejad won the most votes, there was no international presence that's able to validate that fact.
Okay.
So I think, unfortunately, we really don't know what the election results were.
Eric, I want to thank you for joining us. That's Eric Bjornlund, president and founder of Democracy International. You're listening to The Takeaway.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MY-TAKE.
869-8253.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.